down here. So this is Monday, the 12th of March at 15:15 hours with Walter Burnett. Would you like to follow this to start with, the questions in here? It's just an easy way to get going.
Just go ahead. Whatever.
Where and when did you join a military force?
I joined in 1940, British Army, Pioneer Corps.
You're not from Britain?
No, I was born in Vienna, in Austria. Came across in 38. From Italy.
There was free travel at that point, or did
Pardon?
There was free travel at that point? I mean, did you have to?
Yes, there was no problem. We left before my parents. My father worked for a shipping company in Trieste in Italy. So we left in 33 already. That's well before the Nazis came in.
Why did you join the British forces?
Well, I felt pretty strongly about the fate of the Jews and the general conditions, and I loved England, and I felt I had to do my bit.
What was known? I mean, we've had different views. What was known about what was happening to the Jews?
Well, we knew about the concentration camps. We knew about the anti-Semitic excesses in Germany and Austria. We were well informed.
The anti-Semitic laws that were passed, regulations. Now, you joined the pioneers. Was that
the only unit you were allowed to join?
Now, I think of pioneers. These were
we did very heavy physical work.
Right,
we built roads, we built camps, and so on. It was very heavy physical work.
I'm aware of them because I'm an engineer, military engineer, Royal Canadian Engineers.
I see.
And we knew it in my time. We knew that there had been pioneer corps that assisted the engineers, but there weren't any.
All kinds of jobs. The first job we did was we worked with the New Zealanders in the forests, helping them cut down the trees.
How old were you when you joined?
Pardon?
How old were you?
20.
So you'd finished school?
Well, I finished school in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And after spending 1 year learning the language and studying like crazy, I went to school for a year, and when I came back, there was a sign over the school, Jews are not allowed to enter.
Really?
Now, where was your family living? Had they also gone to England?
Yeah, no. We lived in Trieste, and then from Trieste we went. I had my aunt was a resident, had lived for many years in London. So she helped us to get over there.
And your family spent the war years in England?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, my father, also at the age of 42, joined the Pioneer Corps for a few years.
Wow.
Yeah, we were together in the same unit for a while.
Wow.
Were you considered to be, like you said, you were an alien, but not an enemy?
Well, the point was, when you were called to a tribunal in London, and being Jewish, you usually, the denomination was friendly enemy alien. You're laughing, huh?
Go figure. Yeah.
Friendly enemy alien.
Because you were, by nationality, an Austrian.
Yeah. Well, it was, there were, at that time, there was a great fear of this so-called fifth column infiltrating and all this, you see. So.
You know, it has a bureaucratic logic to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, I didn't feel bad about it at all. I realized that it was better to be on the safe side than otherwise, you know.
Your early training, so you, I presume, went to a recruiting office somewhere and they told you...
No, I was interned.
Ah.
I was interned for a year. And they recruited us from the internment camp.
Uh-huh. So you were interned 1937-38?
I was interned end of, well, the war started 38. Beginning of 19, yeah, end of 38, I think. I can't try to.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you came to England in 38, then were interned for a year?
No. Wait a minute, we came in 38, I'm sorry, I was interned in 39.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sorry.
Was this an internment camp in England?
Yeah.
Where?
Well, we were first in a camp called Heighton, near Liverpool, and then we were on the Isle of Man.
Can I ask what the conditions were like?
Not too bad. The only problem was in Heighton, there was continuous bombing. We were sleeping in tents. And it wasn't very pleasant. The bombs were falling all around us.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the main diet was herring. They felt herring was contained all the necessary vitamins and proteins. So the main meal each day was herrings.
I like herring, but every day...
I'm surprised I can still look at the herring in the air today.
And did they have you work or
no?
So it was like a
just
prison?
Had to occupy yourself.
School?
Nothing. At that time there was nothing. Just the hope to get out.
They had other problems.
Yeah.
So then they came to the camp. They were looking for young men who were willing to fight the Germans.
Well, it was basically non-combatant at that time. It was strictly work building things.
Did they give you any training?
They gave us a pickaxe.
You learn how to use that pretty quickly.
And you went, where did you go first?
Into the forest.
But what in England, the forest in England?
Yeah, well, I lived from 38 until I was interned. My parents still lived in London all the time, and my brother. And then the first unit I joined was in Cirencester, in the Forest of Dean, the Robin Hood's country.
Mm-hmm. Sherwood Forest.
Yeah.
So you went out of England with your unit?
No. Where to?
No, I don't. I'm asking. I mean,
No. At that time, the Pioneer Corps was strictly. At that time, there was no. The English troops were only in France, you know, at that time. But the Pioneer Corps was strictly in England.
The Canadian Pioneer Corps, for instance, worked in Scotland, cutting lumber, maybe, and running sawmills and so on. That was strategic material. Okay, so then something happened. How long were you cutting trees? How long in the Pioneer Corps?
Oh, let me think. I joined 1940. I think it was until 43, and then I joined the regular army. Then they asked for volunteers to join the regular army.
So by then they knew you well?
But
by then they would know you well, or they would feel they
knew
you
well. Yeah, well, anybody who wanted to could join, or was fit could join the army. I joined the artillery, Royal Artillery.
Did they give you British citizenship?
No, only after the war.
Prove yourself first. And the artillery sent you to where for training?
I was in Well, in Harrogate in England, right. The training, artillery training, range firing and all that.
25 pounders.
25 pounders.
It's a good gun. Okay, and were you assigned to a unit?
Well, I can't remember the unit. They have the units here. I can't remember. They got me here down. What did it say here? They say, okay, the last regiment was Royal Fusiliers, then 156 Field Battery, 173 Field Regiment, Royal Artillery. I couldn't even remember all this. But they picked up the records here, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, they made them up.
Yeah, well, these are official records.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think it may be a cover story. Okay, and then from the artillery?
No, I went to Italy. I was attached to the 8th Army.
Uh-huh. Did you take part at 43? So did you make it in time for the landings in Sicily?
I didn't take part in any of the major landings. I was attached to a central commander where I mostly acted as interpreter and court interpreter, I think, because I spoke Italian, German.
Of course. So. Oh, you were worth your weight in gold.
Yeah. Until, was it 1944? There was a bulletin on the notice board saying they're looking for German-speaking volunteers for the commandos. And that's where I volunteered.
And once you put your name forward, was there some kind of examination or...?
Well, they sent two commandos, they were German Jews to us. Captain Shelley and Captain Bartlett were their names. They were apparently sergeant in the number 3 troop and landed on D-Day, and all the officers were killed and they were promoted on the field. Then they came to Italy to start this commando, which was supposed to take part in a landing behind the German lines on Lake Comacchio near Ravenna.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember how many of us were. There were about
12,
14 that picked out from various regiments.
With this probably supporting a bigger... Just supporting the Anzio operation?
No, this was
Americans.
The main action took place was Lake Comacchio near Ravenna,
mm-hmm.
And it was like it was supposed to be a thorn in the side of the British 8th Army advancing,
mm-hmm.
And we were supposed to clean that out. I don't know about the 10,000-15,000 German troops on that spit.
Well, number 3 troop wasn't going to do that alone, so...
Well, we had training at a place called Minervino, where we had very rigorous training for about a month. I never want to go through that again.
Mm-hmm.
Life ammunition firing from all sides and mm-hmm. all the baloney. So then one day, because I was the longest in the army and probably the most experienced one, I was the only one who took part in that action as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And
can we read about that? Someone else? Can we read about that action? Has that been published?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's in the history somewhere, Lake Comacchio, Ravenna.
Yeah. It's in the north, but not on the Mediterranean side, not the Adriatic.
Well, I have to would have to look at the map. It's not. It's further. It's pretty well up north.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to place it. Can look that up. So 1 month of training, and you're a commando, and you were training with other German Jewish men.
Well, it was a mixed bag. There were maybe out of I don't know how many, 17. Some were Jewish, some were, there were a couple of guys, some who volunteered from the Foreign Legion, French Foreign Legion. It was a mixed bag.
French Foreign Legion could have been from anywhere. They were.
They just asked for volunteers, and I was the sacrificial lamb. I was the only one who went into action. That.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't go with the ones you'd been training with for a month. They took you out of that, and you went with another group.
Yeah, I was attached to number 2 commando. It's a Scottish commander.
That's a bit awkward, because it's not people you're training with, you didn't know them.
Well, we were all trained soldiers. Mm-hmm. We just reached the peak of fitness. We did other things like blowing up bridges and things like that, mm-hmm. which we hadn't done before. And physical training, just marching and running and God knows what.
Toughening.
Yeah.
Toughening training.
So, I mean, we were all trained soldiers. We've been in the army for a while.
Mm-hmm. That was a short duration.
That
was a short duration, that action?
Well, it lasted for, I was in the line there for about a week. Mm-hmm. Seems like 10 years.
Yeah.
We had to, we were, they had this, what is called the buffalo. Mm-hmm. So you know the buffalo?
The amphibious vehicle.
Yeah, well, we were supposed to go in the buffalo and cross Lake Comacchio and get into position next morning when there's supposed to be an artillery barrage starting. We got into the lake and all the boats, all the buffaloes got stuck. And we had to spend the night up to here in water pushing the buffaloes to the other side. That was good planning.
They're terrible machines.
Yeah.
My father told me stories of using them on the Scheldt estuary in between Holland and Belgium.
Yeah.
Same problem, where they would sink.
But the thing was that nobody thought of measuring the water level or finding out how deep it is before they put us in all these things and everybody got sinking in this thing and keep on pushing that filthy water across all night. So I can still taste it in my mouth.
So it still got you across, but it was so
shallow. Yeah, well, we came, as soon as we landed, we came under heavy fire, and we advanced across the spit there, and then I went to the established an HQ and we interviewed some prisoners to find out position. Then the bloody RAF dropped a bomb 50 yards from us. I still see the bomb, never exploded, just sitting there. And then we dug in, and then the Germans counterattacked, and were sitting in a slit trench for about 3 days. Just.
Do you know, was the objective achieved?
Well, it was, yeah. The area was completely cleared.
Hmm.
Yeah. The sad thing I always found in the Scottish commando, when I remember the. And somebody was killed. They had 4 guys, and they had carried the corpse, you know, on a stretcher.
Yeah.
And the piper was in front, mm-hmm. playing the lament. That goes right through us.
Mm-hmm. You see, we do that for our soldiers now in Afghanistan. It's not the same.
I don't think they should do it. It's most depressing.
It's It's a cultural thing for Scottish culture that gets the mourning process going. Yeah. So, couldn't take a week in sit shiva for everyone. So, and so you were recovered from that action, then you rejoined.
God knows how many thousands of we went to Rimini, a place called Rimini.
I know Rimini. Yeah.
You know Rimini? Well, we were there on the beach. We were in boarding houses there, and we ran into the sea at 6 o'clock in the morning swimming. And then they brought in thousands and thousands of German prisoners, and we guarded them. They came across from Austria, from the Brenner.
Can you remember what date you're at now?
Oh, boy. Well,
if they're in Austria, it must be into 45.
Yeah, that was 45. That was the war just... it wasn't VE Day, because I was in London in VE Day. It was must have been beginning of 45.
Mm-hmm. So, again, they used you as an interpreter, interrogator.
Yeah. And
Rimini?
Well, we went back, we were sent back to England, and I was on, they sent me on a course, intelligence course and interpreter course, I think for about 3 months, I don't remember, and then they sent me off to Germany for a year.
So we're now post-war?
Pardon?
After VE Day now?
Yeah.
So you were in the occupation force.
That's right. So the bastard staff gave me great pleasure.
Mm-hmm. There's some stories coming out in recent years of treatment of German prisoners in that first year after the war, and they claim that thousands under American control died of starvation, of exposure.
I think that's bullshit. From what I've seen, every prisoner was treated more fairly than they should have been treated. I never saw any prisoners mistreated. I felt like mistreating them, but I didn't.
So you were interviewing them to understand if they had been Nazi Party or...
No, what I did was mostly... I did court interpreting in Germany, and I was in charge of a small unit. One of my jobs was to pick up girls and take them to the to the doctor and have them checked for VD. Just wonderful.
It's German girls. What part of Germany were you in?
Unna, Westphalia.
We lived 3 years in the south. We were in Baden-Württemberg.
Well, it's near Dortmund, if that means anything. It was British zone.
So, at the end of the war, what rank did you
have? Staff Sergeant.
Staff Sergeant. And... did they give you, as commandos, did the commandos receive the same campaign stars for the theaters of operations?
Exactly the same. As a matter of fact, they just sent me a little booklet, and it says I had been automatically joined the Commandos Old Comrades Association.
Oh, of course. And they want money.
That was it.
Very kind. So you have the Italy Star?
Italy, what is it? Italy Star, the
Northwest
Defense Europe. Medal.
Defense, yeah.
The Wars, four.
Yeah, the Victory Medal.
Pardon?
There is a Victory.
Yeah, there was four. I got them in there somewhere, buried in my thing.
Now, we're very aware, you know, we have been interviewing these veterans like yourself. Fascinating stories. We're concentrating on a few years of a lifetime. Now, you had a whole life after that. Can you give us just a few words of what your career was?
Well, it's a very impressionable age, and it's a memory which never leaves you.
Of course.
Because how can you forget these things which you saw?
So what did you do after?
Well, I got married before I left for Germany. I got married. And then I worked for my father, who had a factory. And then we decided to come out here. And here I got some from Austria, strange enough. I got some agencies, and I traveled all over Canada. I know every spot and dot in Canada except the Northwest Territories. And I had my own agency, and I sold chocolates and all kinds of stuff.
You came to British Columbia.
Traveling, yeah, selling everywhere.
But when you moved to Canada, you...
No, I was in Montreal.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We lived in Montreal until about 6 years ago.
Oh, when did you arrive in Montreal?
1952. Oh. From London.
Mozart Kugeln.
Yeah, I sold those.
Yeah. We had a neighbor of ours in Ottawa across the street was a woman who had come from Austria soon in the early 50s, I guess. And
well, all the Germans, they all came. When they came in the early 50s, and they came from Germany, Austria, and prejudice,
So you retired here?
But?
You retired when you finished your business and you moved to Victoria.
Well, I retired when I was about 59. Oh. And then just fooled around. We came here every year. We liked it very much until we finally made up our minds to come out here. And my wife was sick for many years, unfortunately.
Where she was from Austria? Or
also from Vienna, yeah.
The next few questions are about what it was like to be a Jewish soldier.
I have to say one thing. When I was in the British Army, in the proper British Army, I did not notice any sign of discrimination or anti-Semitism. All these years I've been in there, I have to say I was always amazed, and I was treated as one of them all the time. And I can never forget that.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful testimony to be able to give. Was there any concept of observing Jewish holidays or Shabbat?
Not really. I'm not very religious. And my upbringing was... We were told, we knew we were Jewish, we celebrated certain holidays in a very superficial way, but we were never religious. Mm-hmm. My wife was the opposite, so it was a little bit difficult for her sometimes.
This is a question that we designed for Canadians, but maybe you'll have a view on it. The politics in Canada, the policies were they didn't allow Jewish refugees into Canada during the war.
Well, from what I know, I always remember one is too many.
That's right.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I tell you one thing that I think at the beginning it's I felt much more uncomfortable here than I felt in London.
Huh?
Not that I give a damn, to be quite honest. Once I got out of the army, I told them to go to hell there. As a matter of fact, when I applied for my passport, some bureaucrat wrote Walter Burnett, and then he wrote underneath, formerly Walter Inlander. That was my previous name. So I got raving mad. I went to the Foreign Office and started a small riot there.
This is for a British passport or a Canadian?
British.
Uh-huh.
And they gave me a new passport. I have all respect for England. I love England, and I think the way the people behaved during, before, and after the war was just magnificent.
You've been back to visit?
Huh?
You've been back to visit?
Oh yeah, many times. My parents lived there. My father died in 78. My mother died in 75. They lived there all the time.
The next group of questions, I'll tell you all three questions because it may affect how you... What are your best memories of your wartime experience?
Of what experience?
Of your wartime experience.
Wartime experience?
What were your best memories?
Best memory was...
What were your worst memories? And from that, would you have any message for young people today?
Well, the best memories were the British people under fire during the Blitz. And being part of them. The worst memory was being interned and watching the bombers fly overhead and not knowing which way to turn because we were sleeping in tents. If you tell me to address young people, I'm saying I'll never join the army because they do not know what they are doing. Don't publish that, but...
Well, what should they do then?
Huh?
What should they do?
No choice. When you're 19 or 20, you're all immortal heroes.
Yeah.
All immortal heroes.
I remember it well. That's very helpful. I don't want to restrict you. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about?
I don't think so.
I mentioned the exhibits. If it's of interest to you, of course, you'll be invited to the luncheon. You'll be invited to the public ceremony. If you have any memorabilia or artifacts you'd like to loan for a few days, literally, we would display them there.
I had lots of it, but when I came back and I was demobbed, my wife said I should at least keep my green beret. I threw everything out in the garbage. I was so mad and so happy to be out of it. So I have a few pictures, and that's it.
Pictures are excellent. We can scan them into the computer.
Well, that should be my decision. Myself and my closest friend.
Oh,
that was in Italy.
Oh, you're wearing the jump smock.
Pardon?
You're wearing the parachute smock.
Well, we learned parachuting as well.
Where is the rest of your family now?
Well, my wife died 2 years ago. My son is president of the Emily Carr Institute in Vancouver.
Oh.
My daughter lives in Brentwood here. She's a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not too far. That's good.
No, they're all around here.
What is your daughter's name?
Sandy. Sandy Burnett. Anybody who married in Quebec had to keep their own maiden name.
We just missed that.
Yeah.
We were married before.
Yeah. Well, you know that.
Yeah, we grew up in Quebec. We were married there in 71. Yeah, I just graduated from the Royal Military College and received my commission. sent on the first posting. So
and you stayed in the army all these years?
Yeah.
What specifically did you do?
I was trained as a combat engineer and did many, many different things.
Seems a long time for me.
Of course, yeah.
I couldn't wait.
Yeah, but it's a different... different
no, it's, more, it's more of a profession. I mean, it's a different story, you see.
Yeah, trained as a civil engineer.
Yeah.
It was all good. Yeah, we can't compare the experiences.
No.
My time in a war zone was quite short.
Anything where you're forced, to be, is a totally different, totally different story.
Yeah. Well, here, let me show you.
You're friends with...